Hello and welcome to Hero Quest episode 426. Update possibly required for your podcast listener. I'm your host, Mike Epps, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
Still a 404 for me, the Unicorny Fanboy Master. It's gonna be a short one.
Yes.
It's gonna be a short one.
This will hopefully be a short one.
It will be a short one, or you're gonna be doing it alone, because
that's true.
I'm still recovering from the flu.
Ugh.
Nasty one this year. Don't get it.
I presumably had the flu over at the end of the summer last year. It might be the same one.
So then you might be vulnerable to new variants, you fool.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Get your flu shot.
I did.
Yes.
I don't want to think about what my life would be like if I hadn't.
Probably much worse.
This one's kicked my ass. Absolutely kicked my ass. I mean, like, there's like a period of like 3 days where I suffered almost constantly from dry mouth because I could not like sleep. I was sleeping most of the day and I could not breathe well enough through my nose. And so I am suffering something that is not literally a symptom, but it's a knock-on effect from that symptom, which is to say my mouth sucks right now.
Flu bad. I've heard the flu is bad. And you were confirming that the flu this year is bad, so
yeah.
Be careful.
Protect yourself as best you can.
Wash your hands.
Masks still work,
etc. Yes, especially if you have the flu and have to go out, for the love of God, put a mask on. Dear God.
Yeah, be kind to those around you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. But, yeah. So, since we're doing a mini-sode, and since we're early, I don't think we're going to get Fire Miner for a bit, but...
He just said good morning in chat
Did
before.
He?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking in the wrong place.
I was looking at my chat. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's usually been showing up in RP Gamer.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Maybe because that's the one I start first.
Yeah, that'll do it. But yeah, okay, yeah, I see it now. But yeah, so since it'll be kind of a short one, let's do a lightning round of what we've been playing.
I'll start, it's easy, nothing. I've been too fucking destroyed.
Well, I finished Pokemon Legends ZA.
Yay.
Technically. I'm into the post-game now. I'm not sure how far I'll be going into that, just because I tend not to get into the extreme end of Pokemon games as it is. And I probably won't get the DLC either. Just, yeah, too many other things to play. However, need to pick your brains for details on a review, since nobody has done a review for this game on the site just yet.
That was shocking to me.
Yeah.
If I had known that last year after I finished it, I probably would have taken a day off of work and locked myself in a room and written one, because that game
would have
been easier to write about.
I'll start testing you on the Discord channel later to give your thoughts on what you think of the music and stuff, because I'm not usually the best... asked for me very often. I can't play with
it's
this
good.
One.
I
heard it was
music.
Really good, but sometimes a little repetitive. Maybe.
Yeah,
no, like. That's the only thing. Only complaint I've heard about it.
Maybe a little bit, and then you get a nice remix of the Xerneas and Yveltal theme, which is really good. But that's not until post game.
Oh, yeah, the legendaries are always like they always fall off for those tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, apparently the super evil sushi.
Oh, Wheels died. Tonight we go out the evening for pleasure.
Yeah.
Let's see. But yeah, I guess people will hear your more detailed thoughts about with that forthcoming review. Please look forward to it.
Yes. Can talk a little about what I've been playing. Have you been playing anything else, Kaijin? Was that it?
Just the stuff I've been working on. Little Witch in the Woods has been my regular. Be playing that one right now because it only really works on the laptop I'm using to talk to you right now.
That'll do it.
Yeah. The other laptop, it will start and then it will crash on the opening screen. So.
But is that game good?
It's a cute little game.
Interesting.
It's just fun. It's instead of combat, you're going around trying to collect materials to make potions and candies with, except most of the materials come straight off of living things, and some of them really don't want to be harvested.
That tends to be the way of it.
Yeah. But, not in a particularly violent way, more just like they'll run away from you. So you have to figure out exactly how you're supposed to be getting some of these materials. And they can be a little odd sometimes. Like, there's one where you just have to basically play fetch with this thing and try to lure it through puddles, because when it gets wet enough, it'll just shake its fur out, and you can harvest some of the fur that way. And anything else being played?
I got a code for Fairy Tail Dungeons for Switch. Anyone remembers I reviewed the PC version of that back, and I think that was the end of 2024. But I'm going to be writing an impression that the Switch version plus the big update that comes along with it. Which...
You mean the Switch 2 version?
Nope, Switch 1 version. Just came out last week on Switch 1. I assumed it came out on other platforms, but apparently only Switch. So it's now out on PC and Switch. But that is the roguelike deck builder based on the Fairy Tail anime / manga. It's very weird, but it's a very fun little game. Not hard or as complex as something like Slay the Spire, but still quite fun. Mm-hmm. And I guess the big update adds 5 new characters you can play with. And kind of the cool thing about that game is the way it works in kind of the main dungeons anyway, is you'll go through the dungeon as a single character. Like, build a deck and complete that, and then you can save the deck you have at the end. Oh god, that thing obliterated me. And then once you have that for 2 different characters, you can go into the 2-person dungeon, and then after you beat that, there's a 3-person dungeon, which is kind of the main one. So it kind of switches things up in that, hey, those cool decks you actually go through and build, you get to use. And so trying to, put together a really good deck has more purpose than it typically does in this game, because it's not just I'm building a deck for this run, it's I'm building a deck for this run and for future use as well. So it's a pretty cool little game. Like, I gave it a 3.5, the original release, and this big update adds 5 new characters, so that's a great deal more variety for those multi-character runs. Definitely should improve the game quite a lot. And as far as the game on Switch, it runs, plays perfectly. The original Steam version was very, very designed around playing it with a controller. I think I actually mostly played it on Steam Deck when I reviewed it. So it fits perfectly on Switch. It's a fun little game. I think it's, I don't know what it goes for, but I'm pretty sure it's under $20. So people should check that out. I should have an impression up sometime this week, hopefully. And yes, unlike that promised Story of Season review, this one will actually go up.
That's the dream.
Yes, I got busy and also had a hard time writing about Story of Seasons. Not the game I play a lot, and I just could not articulate how I articulate the game very well, so I'm sorry about that. Hopefully someone will review Story Seasons. Like, why am I blanking on his name all of a sudden?
I think you're thinking of Grand Bazaar.
Grand Bazaar, yes.
I'm going to be back in a minute.
Okay. Hopefully someone will eventually review Grand Bazaar. Also been on a big Metroidvania kick of late. Thanks to Metroid Prime 4. So I'm still playing Castlevania Dawn of Sorrow. And also some Hollow Knight, because my son is playing through it, so I'm kind of trying to keep up with him. And that's about it. Now we got some questions from Fireminer. We'll wait until Dave gets back. So did you play all the way through ZA completely in French?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I honestly was thinking, okay, I can't really talk about the English localization, but I could talk about the French one pretty well. You know what? We might just have a paragraph in French in this review. Just for the hell of it.
That would be funny. People would probably hate it, but I would enjoy it.
Well, I wouldn't write the entire review in French. That would probably be beyond my ability. Okay, good. And I did, in fact, guess the meaning of that French slang verb properly.
Nice.
Yeah, just because, as you might have guessed, several of the characters in the game's French translation use a heavy amount of both French online slang, which I'm fairly familiar with, and French envers slang, which I'm not necessarily familiar with. mainly these two verbs, which basically mean to adore and to show off.
Hmm.
They're definitely not the kind of verbs that you would find in a French language class.
Hmm.
However, one of them, frime, which is to show off. So, actually, what's the name of Jacinthe's organization in English?
Oh, I'm terrible at remembering names, so I forget.
Yep.
Well, oh, it was like the Battle Appreciation Society or something like that.
Well, in French, it's the Fédération Rex et Magistam, which for some reason it just decided to use the Latin words for king and majesty.
Huh.
Partly to sound really fancy, but also because the acronym would be FRIM, FRAM, which is based on this verb that means to show off. And I was fairly certain that's what it was. It's like, there's definitely some sort of wordplay going on in here, and I'm fairly certain it's like to be like puffed up, pompous, or to show off, and it's like, it's to show off. So, honestly, the French translation team went really hard on this one. I remember the XY translation in French being pretty good as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's like, they have the national pride at work here. They're going to do their best. Hmm.
wish I knew enough French to play through it in French. Sadly, I did not even finish French, 4 years of French in high school. Huh. I tapped out for my senior year. Shame on me.
Well, the nice thing about playing Pokemon in any alternative language is that you know pretty much what you're getting into anyway. That said, Legends ZA is probably not the best one to try in a different language if you're not too comfortable with it, just because the characters have a lot more personality than some of the older games. I completely skipped the current generation, so I don't know what the current standard is for storytelling, but yeah. So
I mean, hey, the story in Scarlet and Violet was really good.
Oh.
You should play those if you get around to it sometime.
Oh, I should. It's on my list. I was planning to play those in Spanish. Honestly, let's just take a question. I mean, we have no idea how much longer we're waiting.
That's true. Okay. A few years ago, I asked about how much game preservation is tied to distribution of the materials, and I used a hypothetical example about a game developer demanding a museum to only distribute their donated source codes on site. The Game Preservation Society in Japan is facing that problem. Not only that they can't distribute the ROM images they've taken, but recently their government funding was pulled because the law forbids private entities to scan magazines in their entirety. Huh. Game Preservation Society have just opened an office in New York so that they can finally offer a public online database of the ROMs and magazine scans they've achieved, while also giving chance for more funding through Patreon. Best of luck to them, but I also have to wonder how much it's going to help with the funding problem. People I know who work at museums all told me that these entities didn't make a lot of money and relied on a few big money patrons to survive. Mm-hmm. That is a big question.
Yep.
I guess we have to hope there's some big money patrons that want to contribute to game preservation.
I will be honest. If I ever somehow miraculously manage to get to the J.K. Rowling degree of literary success for financially, I would probably be putting the entire $1 billion or so into game preservation.
Hmm.
Like, how many IPs can I or dead IPs can I buy out and then preserve properly? Just gotta do something.
Hmm. Okay, let's see what else he's got. Question. You've talked many times about how the audience connects with characters, that the characters glue the fans to the franchises. A lot of people seem to have this opinion that many modern novels, TV dramas, games, etc. are being made worse because they focus too much on character development at the expense of intriguing plot lines or thematic consistency. I basically think that a lot of modern writers are just fanfic writers who are way into making the audience like the characters. What do you think about this opinion? Cases in point, Ted Lasso and Stranger Things. Two of the best shows of all time. Interesting. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, I think those are two shows. You picked two weird examples because I think those are two shows that are very much all about the characters and were from the beginning. And, I mean, Stranger Things, a lot of it is just kind of geeking out about random 80s stuff too. and D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think about. I mean, Ted Lasso. I think Ted Lasso is both. Honestly, there's a lot that happens in that series, and a lot of. Yes, a lot of it is characters and character growth, but I think there's a lot of interesting story that happens in that series, and it's not just all quote unquote fanfic about the characters. But I mean, I can see the point. I don't really watch enough TV to answer this question.
Yeah, me neither.
I mean, I watch whatever I watch is what I watch with the family or the kids, my wife. So yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I'll give you my take. I think people overanalyze TV to an absurd degree. Like, I understand.
Overanalyze everything because it's like fun.
Yeah, I get it's fun. Sure, it's fun, but I mean, it just gets to be like ridiculous. Like, did you enjoy watching the show? Yes, good. Okay, leave it at that. Like, I have thankfully avoided any sort of analysis of Stranger Things because honestly, I don't give a shit what people think about the show. I watched it and I enjoyed it. I don't really need anything other than that. So, and honestly, I don't have a high opinion of a lot of TV anyway. I prefer video games, which is, hey, why I'm doing a show about video games. So yeah, I don't think there's any specific trend. I don't know. I don't agree, basically. What else do we get here for questions? Something maybe I can better answer. So much has been made of Japanese games being badly translated in English, but have you guys encountered any French or Spanish games being badly translated into English and vice versa?
I mean, it's hard to say because I have not played a lot of French or Spanish games that were actually in English when I played them. I have read some like web comics and other things that were definitely from French or Spanish that got translated into English. And usually one of the first tells is mixing up words like for and since because they're the same word in most of the Romance languages.
Hmm.
But generally, French is not as much of a problem as you might think because in the grand scheme of linguistics, French and English are not very different. Like, on a vocabulary level, on a basic grammatical level, there is not that much of a difference, and most of the ones that are can be very easily swapped around. And since English and French have also been sharing literary talent quite a lot over the last 5 centuries, there's a lot of stuff translates really well. I mean, okay, so random anecdote here. Back in college, one of my French professors, we were at a department picnic, and she was just quizzing people. And so she asked me, who said, tout est bien qui finit bien? And I'm like, Shakespeare. And she was not expecting anyone to answer it correctly. because it's like, that's all's well that ends well, right? Yeah, okay. I mean, granted, the more specific the type of medium, notoriously, Shakespeare's Macbeth took until like 1934 or so to be translated. But that's more of an issue with poetic structure and rhyme and verse, because the two languages are quite a bit different on that, just because of the way the phonetics work. But since a lot of localization is simply matching the tone or situation of one language to something similarly done in the other language without translating directly, it's usually not an issue. First, Brandon, I have not played Expedition 33, so I really can't give any words on that. So,
I mean,
that's about the only example I could think of where it would actually be possible to take a look at this. Dave, any of this?
Was that game? It feels like that game was originally in English.
I don't know, because it's a French studio.
Yeah.
It's quite possible it was.
Given so I would imagine it was written in French, localized into English, and likely given the celebrity status of several of the voice actors, it may have been dialogue, like voice animation synced to the English dub.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if I had access to some really good voice actors, I would probably be using them to tweak the localization. It's also possible that the French and English scripts were written simultaneously. That has happened before.
Yes. Yeah, quite possible.
Did you ever read The Little Prince?
Of course.
Do you know where it was written? Perhaps we'll meet again,
if you live that. I don't remember precisely where it was written, but I know what you're getting at.
Air base outside of Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, it's unexpected.
Because Antoine de Saint-Exupéry was a fighter pilot for the Free French Air Force, and obviously was not based in France at the time of writing. But he did a lot of training with the U.S. Air Force early on. And so he actually wrote The Little Prince in English and French at the same time. I know he had some help with the English part, but that's also how the English version of Little Prince is actually, it actually came before the French publication. Almost a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. If you don't mind just being weird, you can. It's not that difficult to look at two texts, a text in English and French, and pick out the exact same words from each, even when they're not necessarily the actual same word. The two languages just look a lot more like each other than you would think if you haven't actually looked at any other languages. So, and then a lot of the spots where they're actually different, like the French main past tense is the same as the English perfect tense, which means they're made the exact same way. They have the exact same components, but they actually mean different things in verb tense. But Spanish actually matches English better on that section. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Ooh, he's got a Pokemon CA question next.
Yeah. The other game I'm playing right now, Little Witch in the Woods, is definitely Korean originally. I can say that because sometimes if you flip through the menu too fast, it doesn't catch up and it shows the Korean text for a second. And just from playing this, I can tell you that there are certain ways things are formatted, like for polite greetings or letters in Korean, that are very similar to how it's done in Japanese and very different from how it's done in English.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sounds a little weird. Like if you talk to somebody and you've known them and they know you, and it's definitely in the story that they have known you for quite a while at this point, and they say, "Oh, is it?" and then your name. In English, that sounds kind of weird, because like, yeah, it's me. But in Japanese and apparently Korean, that's basically how you say, "Oh, It's you, isn't it? Or, oh, why, like, why isn't it such and such? Like, a polite way of exclaiming, oh, nice to see you again. And it just, it sounds very weird when you translate it directly. The situation and the grammar don't really match very well, I guess is the right way. Okay, sorry.
Oh, good.
Sorry.
Let me.
Will, so you studied French in high school.
I did, yes.
As many.
Anything
do.
In college?
Nothing in college, no. Unless you count Java.
I mean, technically, that is
or
a language.
Binary.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean some universities still have like a minimal foreign language requirement as part of a general degree or not. I just.
Yeah. Mine did not. Not sure why. Or
well,
at least my degree.
Mine
did not.
And also I took so many foreign language courses that everyone looked at my transcript at the end of 4 years and like, what the hell?
I studied French for 4 years. And didn't retain any of it.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Joseph.
C'est dommage.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when I was a junior in high school, I just didn't care about anything and I didn't get along with the teacher and I pissed her off and she pissed me off. And then senior year, I'm like, nope, I'm done. Like I did, you know, I was told repeatedly, you have to do at least, like colleges want to see at least 3 years of a foreign language. And then when I was applying to college, nobody asked, nobody cared. I'm like, all right, that's fine. And then I studied English in college the first time I went. So
that's the end.
The end, yeah. And I didn't see your message, so figured I would jump on at the end here. That's all.
How dare you not be glued into social media 24/7? I'm joking. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted. Go fuck yourself. God damn it.
Just trying to butt back.
Son of a bitch.
How far did you get in Castlevania?
I started like an hour ago.
Oh, okay. You didn't do a randomizer?
No. No, I have not played through the regular game in a long time. I don't need to do a randomizer.
You didn't do the glitch where you skip past death and keep all your gear?
No. No glitches for me.
Okay.
Saw enough of that watching GDQ over the weekend.
Yeah, I gotta watch those videos. I haven't seen them yet.
There was a Dark Souls one which was just ridiculous. It's interesting. Anyway, FireMiner is pumping out questions, so I'm going to jump to the next one, which is Pokemon ZA related. Which is related to our interests. Some people can't help themselves but compare Pokemon ZA with Digimon Time Stranger. Those people are dumb. They really aren't that comparable, though, when you consider that ZA is a spinoff that took over more than 3 years to make, and Time Stranger is a mainline game that took 8 years since Cyber Sleuth. I've already asked, and you already answered, that you were satisfied with the current pace which Pokemon innovated between each title. I feel like this question answers itself.
Yeah. I mean, it's an apples and oranges comparison here.
Yeah.
I mean, just going Digimon versus Pokemon is apples and oranges.
Digimon versus Pokemon is one of those things where, like, they're apples and oranges, and, like, there are certain certain parts of their fandoms that understand that and live with it. There are certain parts of both fandoms that desperately want to get in a goddamn fight because they have not gotten over being eight and one of their friends calling the thing they liked lame.
Yeah.
And, like, And so there is, it is the same thing that animates people still having arguments about whether the Super Nintendo or the Sega Genesis is better. This is every goddamn millennial seems to have an inner 8-year-old that cries out. And so we see So we see this come out every time that there's a Digimon game that comes out that is good. There's a reason this happened after, like, Time Stranger, but did not after Survive.
What, the weird visual novel slash strategy game didn't elicit
like
people?
your favorite game, Tears to Tiara 2.
Jesus fucking Christ. I'll bet it has a better story than that game and more gameplay.
Probably. Although I don't think it does. Like the thing I heard was that it's actually quite skewed visual novel over.
Ugh, vomit.
But
I mean just had to bring it up. Like that one was just so frustrating because it's like this is a really good Sting strategy RPG saddled to a piece of shit.
Completely. being weighed down by like an overwrought and overwritten visual novel.
Ugh.
These like arguments flare up the most when like either a Pokemon game gets a particularly frosty reception from a part of the fan base, or a Digimon game gets a particularly rosy reception from outside the fan base. Because otherwise, like you'll find people that aren't me who will fight and die for some of the old Digimon games that are like unvarnished dog shit. This the podcast where I never shut up, so no one can stop me from saying that. But
please tell me which Digimon games to play.
The story ones from Media Vision are generally the most like safe for normal humans to play.
Oh, good, those are the ones I own.
Yeah, like. Digimon games have never, like, Digimon has never had a super consistent identity as a video game, because Digimon's underlying premise, and we've talked about it before, but I'll be quick, is what it, is Tamagotchi isn't enough for boys, and attempting to be loyal to Tamagotchi rule sets inside an otherwise traditional video game is extremely complicated and frustrating. Which is why, like, Digimon World definitely has fans. When I say Digimon World, I mean Digimon World 1. Again, I'm still traumatized by it. But Digimon World 1 definitely has fans, but it is an acquired taste.
What about the Digimon World I have on my Switch?
I don't remember which one that is. The Next Order?
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember how that one plays. It's like, even back in the day, like, every Digimon World played differently. The second one was the most mind-numbingly slow, traditional turn-based RPG you had ever seen in your life. And by the fourth one, it was, like, the worst action RPG you'd ever played. like, they were united by being bad. But they went from being like bad, but in a way where you could kind of see who they were for, like in the sense of they're shooting for something interesting, to this is a very generic thing that like the only thing that could propel you through it is a love of like Digimon as a concept.
Did you run out of healing items?
I mean, I only had like one, so yes.
All right, you're gonna die.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for the vote of faith.
That's for what?
Thanks for the vote of faith.
Well, you've only got 9 hit points, and those Medusas are hitting you for 7.
Oh, look who found a save point. Oh.
Well, there. All right. Hey, good for you.
Okay.
You're not gonna die.
Are we ready to move on to the next question? Do we have any other Digimon thoughts?
I have nothing to contribute.
I would just keep being mean.
No, I mean, I never got into Digimon because to me it always, I don't know, I always thought of it as like lower budget Pokemon and I just never cared about it.
Store brand Pokemon.
And in fact, yeah. I mean, in fact, it was actually
I remember the cartoon show was actually really good. Actually played the game.
When in fact its actual existence was as like we can't sell Tamagotchi to boys unless they can fight each other.
Right.
Well, hey, the new one looks like store brand SMT.
Are you still talking about story?
Time Traveler, Time Stranger.
Time Stranger. It'll be good. Media Vision's good. Media Vision tends to be a reliable hand. I've not gotten around to it. I'm kind of assuming there will be a Switch 2 port sometime in 2026.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. It seemed to happen to all the Digimon games. It'll survive, probably because it's visual novel garbage. Came out on Switch right at launch.
The other thing was that Survive had like one of the most tortured development cycles I've ever seen.
But like why?
Why do you think that it ended up being what it is?
I honestly don't know. I don't know if I want to know.
Like that's what I'm getting at. Like what the lack of gameplay probably has to do with the curse development. So it was announced in 2018. It started being developed by a company I've never heard of. They were allegedly making it on a very low budget. This was like the people at Bandai Namco sort of looked at what they were seeing and was like, not liking where this is going. Kicked the original developer off, went to a different company I've never heard of, and then had them start it over. But that, it was originally announced in, 2018 with the intention of coming out in 2019, and then it finally came out in, 2022.
Jeez.
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, and then, of course, you'll never guess what happened in between those years.
Some kind of mass global event.
Yeah, just a little one. So Survive was a tortured product. It was not made in a healthy environment. We'll leave it at that. Not a total waste, but definitely one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm not gonna get on your shit for what happened here. This was a rough hand. Let's see.
I'm gonna fire my ass. Next. But how will you feel in the next Pokemon generation takes 4 or 5 years to really push out a great product?
Wait, what was that? What was the question?
It was the continuation of the last question. Savari asked, and you already answered that you were satisfied with the current pace which Pokemon innovated between each title, but how will you feel if the next Pokemon generation takes 4 or 5 years to really push out a great product?
If you just mean generation to generation, we don't care. Yeah, if you just mean generation to generation, that's kind of the pace that Pokemon goes.
Yeah.
Legends of Gaia is still a spinoff, you know?
And it's sort of. Awesome.
And it's fine. Yeah.
Let's look at the numbers. Gen 1 to Gen 2 is about 3 years. They're Game Boy games. Gen 2 to Gen 3, because it's 96 to 99 Japan. I want to say Gen 3 hits Japan in probably late 02. Let's take a check.
That was Game Boy Advance. Yeah.
Game Boy Advance would be a little about then, I guess, 2003? Maybe? No, 2002.
Yeah, November 2002.
Diamond Pearl was 2006. I can tell you that much because I remember buying it.
Yeah, so I looked it up. I was exactly right. November 2002 in Japan. So another 3 years. Diamond and Pearl, 4 years. Black and White, 4 years. X and Y is outlier here because that's 2013. So that goes back to 3 years.
Yeah.
But then.
And then 2016 for Sun Moon.
Yeah. And then Sword and Shield is 2018.
Yeah,
that would
right.
be a that would be a horrifying turnaround time. Yeah, no, 2019.
Which explains some of the things of Sword and Shield.
Yeah, so 3 year turnaround time on that. So honestly, we're due for them like ditching the 3 year turnaround time that they've been trying to get, which you know we've seen we are now in the exact period where we are seeing they have switched, like they did not attempt a 3 year turnaround time for the next gen. Like we are at 4 years. I suspect we will get Gen 10 this year. Like that's going to be the Switch 2's big holiday game.
That makes
part
sense.
Of me is wondering if the shortened times between 6th, 7th, and 8th gen was partly from different teams working on it because those are some very different hardware requirements between those three. Especially Sword and Shield versus Sun and Moon.
Yeah, I mean, they're like ultimately, I think some of it is also them trying. Like they were definitely in the process of staffing up between games over and over, but. Yeah, like at this point, like I don't think a 3 year turnaround time is going to happen in the near future. And again, I think part of the reason that the original ongoing anime series finally died was to free them from that particular aspect of marketing.
Sounds good.
The first time that the new, because you can remember way back in the day that, Gen 2 was late in Japan because they had to make this entire like Orange Islands arc. The anime just makes up its own area, and then while it sort of like bides its time for Gen 2 games to come out, and so the need to coordinate these things and to not let things like that happen. Is definitely a pressure that was continuing to force every 3 years.
It's not like Pokemon has never had the strategy of making all the side games to pad out the space between the main games anyway.
Oh yeah, so, I mean
it's like what are we even worried about here? We're not going to have a drought of Pokemon games.
Yeah. Gen 3 to Gen 4 is particularly, like, heinous. Like, anyone who's, like, upset about needing to quote-unquote, needing to buy two Pokemon games to get all of the Pokemon for a generation must be reminded forcibly of Gen 3, the most heinous version of you must purchase at least, like, If you had no friends and were attempting to fill out the Pokedex in Ruby Sapphire, you were going to need to purchase Ruby and Sapphire, Fire Red and Leaf Green, and both of the GameCube games, Colosseum and XD Gale of Darkness.
What?
Really?
Yeah. There were Pokemon. Like, a bunch of the Shadow Pokemon from those games were, like, the only way to officially get Johto Pokemon.
Oh, okay, I was wondering about that. Okay.
Was Gale of Darkness any good?
And it's okay. It's an interesting idea. It's made by a company called Genius Sonority. who was the remnants of the Dragon Quest VII developer. So there's some interesting ideas in there, but it's very low budget and very weird. But yeah, so that was how you were intended to get a whole bunch of the Johto Pokemon in Gen 3. It was heinous. It expected you to own, like, they actually expected you to at least own two different consoles. Yeah. Like, you were expected to at least own a GameCube and a Game Boy Advance.
Jeez.
And unfortunately, the sad realities of hardware just the sad realities of hardware meant that you couldn't transfer anything forward between two and generations two and three anyway.
That was definitely also intentional. If they'd really wanted hardware to be able
to do that, they might have been able to do it, but eh.
Well, it's one of those things where, like, Nintendo would have moved heaven and earth to make that possible if Game Freak asked them to. Game Freak definitely considered Gen 3 an option to unfuck the data structure that was used to house basically all Pokemon. Like, the reason
you some could some of the stories out of the development of the first two generations of Pokemon are insane.
The reason that you can transfer Pokemon forward over and over and over from, like, you know, some of the services to do this no longer officially exist, but, you know, to get a Pokemon from Gen 3 to Gen 9, it still was possible in some fashion. But the reason that this is that this is possible is, and, like, you know, a lot of times the ways to do that are insane. But the reason this was possible was that there was a will to make it happen, and they've never fucked with the underlying data structure of how Pokemon are built before in a way that doesn't make conversion of them fairly simple.
Okay.
But if you there's too much fundamentally different. There was a point where you could trade, like, red, blue, gold, silver Pokemon from from the 3DS games, from the 3DS eShop versions to Sun and Moon. And that, all that was doing was it was just generating a new Pokemon based off of the old one. But the underlying data structure is just very different, and they definitely wanted to be rid of it.
Yeah, I was just thinking last night about about Pokemon, and, like, I had the Game Boy and a bunch of games, and I don't know what even happened to it. I didn't even like it that much. And then I wanted the Game Boy Color because I wanted to play Pokemon. I watched the show, I collected the cards, so I got Yellow, and then I went back and got Red. But the thing is, I just never liked handheld or portable consoles that much. And so I remember being livid when they announced Pokemon Snap. I'm like, why would I want to take pictures of them? And then with Pokemon Stadium, it was like, okay, at least I can battle, but that's all it is. So, like, I always wanted just a traditional Pokemon experience on my TV with a controller, and that's why probably Sword and Scarlet are probably my favorite ones now, because I was able to play them on the console and in the way that I wanted to. And so I lost interest in the series for a long time just because I didn't have Game Boy Advance. I didn't have DS. But I always thought that was odd that N64, GameCube, Wii U didn't just have a traditional Pokemon game. There was all these weird spin-offs. I always thought that was an odd decision.
It's the wrong platform for the target audience,
I suppose. But
it is.
I loved Pokemon, and I didn't want to play on a tiny screen.
No, I get it, but I mean,
you know,
especially thinking back to like the N64 games, there were tons and tons and tons of Game Boys out there, and not as many N64s.
Sure. So then, like, I was really happy when Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu came out, because it's like, oh, okay, it's a remake of the original, and I love that one. But, you know, of course, they had to put in the motion controls, gyro, aiming, and then they were trying to integrate it with Pokemon Go. And Yeah, but I mean, there was just a huge emphasis on catching the Pokemon, you know, and oh yeah, just catch 20 copies of the same one. I'm like, well, why would I want to do that? And then Legends Arceus kind of did that too. To fill out your Pokedex, you got to catch 10, 20 copies of the same Pokemon for that entry. So I don't know. I can just say that Sword and Scarlet and now Legends EA are among my favorites in the whole series.
I didn't like Arceus as much for the same reason. Like I want quite a bit. I mean, I liked it, but like just catching. I like the battling more. Obviously, I like hunting down, catching the Pokemon I want.
I mean,
but
you can absolutely battle something if that's how you want to catch it.
No, for sure. I just don't think the battling's as that interest that great in that game compared to like a mainline game.
Go back and retry it. Give yourself a little more.
Yeah.
What I would say is that I like Let's Go more than you guys do. I never played Pokemon Go, but I like Let's Go more than you guys do.
I haven't played either of them, so I'm just listening. Yeah.
I like Let's Go.
I like Let's Go. I thought you really disliked Let's Go. You did for a while there. Whatever.
It's too much Gen 1. I've had too much Gen 1.
Ah, gotcha.
But I love the co-op aspect of it, which is why I was very happy with Scarlet and Violet, for sure.
But yeah, I like Let's Go. I like Legends Arceus. They're not my favorites, but what I will, I would probably play Legends Arceus again over Sword and Shield. I don't hate Sword and Shield by any means, but I feel like I would get more interest out of replaying Arceus. But broadly speaking, I like them conceptually because one of the things that they were clearly attempting with those was that they were trying to make catching Pokemon a more gamified experience. Like there was more there was more excitement to catch than to battle. Mm. And whether they succeeded or not is, you know, certainly an exercise for the player. I think that there's a lot of fun in trying to sneak up on something, throwing a Pokeball, and sometimes you just fuck up completely, and suddenly it turns into a scramble to throw something at it to force it into a fight, or it notices you and starts trying to fight you, or it tries to... And the way that a fight can get hairy if it's, say, if there is an alpha nearby that suddenly decides that it's that the fight you're currently trying to have is its business as well.
Yep.
Like, all of those are...
Oh, yeah.
All of those are fun. All of those are interesting, and they're designed to make the capture experience more interesting than the way that mainline games had trained you to play them as the capture experience was you get something that gets the enemy down to as low of health as possible. You have something, put it to sleep, and then you throw Ultra Balls until the RNG favors you. To make that experience both more varied and also just more interesting by consequence. So even if you don't think that those succeeded, I think that they were very important to attempt.
Yeah, and the only other thing I was going to say about like turnaround time is like with Scarlet Violet, you know, clearly there was more emphasis on quantity over quality. So you had this massive seamless open world for the first time, and you had three different main storylines. And but then, you know, it was just had some technical issues that thankfully were ironed out on Switch 2. But then you go over to Legend ZA. Please,
no, hold on. I'm going to stop you right there. Okay. The game is fine on Switch 1.
Okay.
Let's relax with it was fixed on Switch 2.
But so where I'm going with this is that the when you go to Legend ZA, you've got just this one city, and clearly there's more polish, there's better graphics, there's better performance. And so if 4 to 5 years means we get a game that's the size and scope of Scarlet Violet, but with the level of polish we got with Legend ZA, then yeah, I'm all for that. I'd rather they not rush games out if they have to compromise either the quality or the quantity, you know?
Especially if we're going to get more Legends games, which I feel like are a better, like, interquel game than we've had in the past. Not that I mind, like, a mystery dungeon game, but there's been a lot of weird games in between.
This is definitely a step up.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't mind another Conquest game.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be neat. I'm sure Koei would love to do that again, too, because I'm sure that did better than most Nobunaga's ambitions.
Yeah.
I was watching, YouTube recommended me, like, a nerd going over every Nobunaga's Ambition game, and he got to this, and he was like, this is really different from the other ones, I'm going to save this for another video.
So. There was additional part to this question.
Oh yeah, I should check that.
Seeing how
I might need to bow out soon.
Yeah, we'll start wrapping up very soon. But how will you feel if the next Pokemon generation takes over? That we did that.
Are you ready?
How much will Nintendo the Pokemon can do everything in their power to make the reality? Pokemon as a franchise certainly seems strong enough to survive 4 to 6 years without a new game. Unlike something such as Inazuma 11 or Yo-Kai Watch, I think 6 years is probably too long.
Yeah,
6 years is too long because you missed essentially an entire childhood.
Yeah.
Four to 5 years is probably
Though, again, unlike most of the other comparable series, Pokemon does, again, pad out the space in between. So.
Right. I was going to say that, you know, 4 or 5 years between... Yeah, so taking that long to get a new generation is tolerable because there could be 2 or 3 spinoffs in that time as well, you know. Remasters, remakes, that sort of thing, yeah.
We will continue to see, like, Legends-style projects that are designed to be big deal games that do not necessarily require the exact same team as would be working on the next generation of Pokemon.
Right.
The Legends games are kind of big deal games because they're mid-gen games that are allowed to introduce new forms of Pokemon.
Right.
They won't introduce a lot of them, but you will get things like how Legends Arceus introduced things like Cleaver.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
or
that,
just
you know,
Hisuian versions of Pokemon.
Yeah, but I'm bringing up Cleaver because it gets its own dex number. It is an alternate evolution of Scyther that gets its own dex number. And
well, see, I didn't even know that one.
Yeah.
Landorus and Thundurus had another one in their group. Remember that one?
I believe that's correct. But broadly before Legends, like. Before Legends, spinoffs were not allowed to, like, the most you could do was that, and you could tell Gen 4 was taking a long time, probably longer than they had maybe originally intended, when Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness had, like, a handful of, like, the new baby Pokemon floating around in it, like Munchlax. But you couldn't actually use them. They didn't have stats, they didn't have move pools, anything like that. But, so Legends is the first time that, like, a spin-off game would introduce a Pokemon that was fully functional. Like, gets its own dex number, and has, like, a full statted thing that you can catch and use.
Fireminer is yelling at us to stop talking about Pokemon, but
okay.
Hey, who brought it up? You brought it up.
He did.
We're very good at talking about Pokemon.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, then the next question is something about Falcom and taking risks in Japan, and I don't know. I thought Falcom said they were going to start using AI or something.
I mean, every Japanese company is saying that.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yes. And they haven't necessarily defined what they mean by AI. Possibly because they're trying to hedge their bets on what actually ends up falling out of this situation.
Most companies, like, we're going to be seeing over the next 2 or 3 years a bunch of games falling out where it'll be difficult. There will be a whole bunch of postmortems about what, if any, attempt was made to quote unquote develop with AI. So at this point, as grim as it is every time I hear it, it doesn't mean much.
Okay.
I mean, right now we're seeing reports going on about, like, signs of productivity increased by less than 1%, maybe, in some areas, and decreased by quite a lot in others.
A lot of times developers will talk very publicly about how they're going to use it, and then they'll sort of, like, hedge back because it didn't, like, it either didn't work or the backlash was so huge that it wasn't worth it. We've seen, like, some backtracking from Larian over the past week about it.
A good anecdote I saw on Blue Sky the other day was referring to somebody's, basically it was at an arts university, this one student was studying graphic design and storytelling, like sequential art type stuff, comics. And she was talking about how her art professors were saying that, you could use Gen-AI to make storyboards or stuff, but don't do it on the art because the art's the important part. And the writing professors were saying, you can use the Gen-AI to come up with concept models for the art, but don't do it for the script because the script is important.
Yeah, everyone thinks that their area of expertise is the only irreplaceable one.
And in fact, they are all correct, and they're yet all wrong at the same time.
Yeah.
So
it turns out that there is no unimportant part of any worthwhile piece of art.
Yep.
But yeah, so what was the actual question here regarding Falcom?
Let me get into it. RPG Gamer already reviewed Trails Beyond the Horizon. You guys know what it has been able to achieve. I'm personally convinced that the franchise has reached its apex, but you also have to ask if Falcom have reached their apex with their current budget and staff size. Their president recently announced they would speed up the release schedule because they had about 6 new things in the oven. If you know anything about the current financial and manpower state of the Japanese industry, isn't it a bit risky?
I think
when has Falcom cared?
I mean, they're a relatively conservative company, but what I will say is that one of the things that they're probably looking at is that, like, they're aware that Trails as a whole.
Hold on. Fireman said, "Christ, my question that you need." I'm sorry, Fireman. I'm so sorry. We're making up our own questions within your questions.
Yeah, that's
to
why
answer.
I was trying to drag you back to Falcom. You dipshit.
Okay. I wasn't even talking about AI. I didn't bring it up.
You were, but never mind.
Well, what happened was I read his statement, and that's what I thought of. Like, probably why they wanted to use AI is for the goal that he stated there. And as for it being risky, I think the risk is the backlash from the community if you want to use AI. But I think I kind of took it in the wrong direction.
I don't think that's a risk anyway.
We're not litigating this, okay, motherfucker.
It's fine.
Okay. So, okay. I'm getting through this thought process because my brain is cooked right now. Okay. It would be risky to not change tactics at this stage. Rails is as big a hit as they've ever had, but it is also at the point where the weight of its continuity makes it difficult to onboard people. That's why they're doing things like Trails in the Sky First Chapter. Like, they're trying to create onboarding points, but they can't just ditch continuity. That is a big part of the series' stickiness and appeal. They need to focus on finding things that can stand alongside Trails. It's why they're We know that at least one of those six projects that they're running late on, fucking name, Kyoto Xanadu. Or, like, we don't technically know that's what it's called, but that sure seems like what it is. But yeah, Kyoto Xanadu, that was, I think, supposed to be out last year, but we haven't heard hide nor hair of that in like a year and a half. You know, I'm sure there's some sort of East product somewhere in development. And I'll be like, there's definitely more Trails remakes in development. And
probably more East there... remakes in development.
Yeah, when I say East games, I'm including remakes.
Okay.
And what's the last thing I was thinking of before? East Trails remakes. And of course, like, an actual new Trails game. I'm sure that they, but like, somewhere in their deep in the back office, I'm sure there is also someone trying to figure out what they do when they just conclude Trails.
Mm.
Like, when that storyline is finished. Because you want to be figuring that out while the series is still strong. You don't want to be figuring that out when the series is done, like it's tailed off. Like, obviously eventually, you know, anything popular, it's gonna reach its peak, and then people are gonna fall off, they get tired of it, they lose interest, whatever. This is the time to try to figure that out. This is the time to take risks when you can still recover from a bad investment by recuperating with Trails in the Sky Second Chapter, or like East 11 or whatever, or East 5 remake or whatever. Honestly, I wonder if they're maybe considering, like, something, if I were them, I'd be considering is another, like, back to the drawing board rethinking of how East works.
Mm.
I'm
gonna say this cannot be the first time they've been in a similar situation, considering how many decades they've been at this.
Like, the worst time for Falcom is definitely post East 3. That is when they are not a solvent enough company to make, they're not a large enough company to make a fourth East game. Like, too many people have left to do something else. Most of them end up going to, like, fucking Quintet and making Soul Blazer. But a number of them, like, you know, some of the others, like Ancient, Yuzo Koshiro's company, like, but broadly speaking, that is when they are at, like, they are so brain drained that they barely exist. And during that period, they live off of licensing, and they do, and they try to rebuild as a developer on the Super Famicom late in that system's life. I think based on how, primarily on the fact that, like, Mask of the Sun and Wanderers from East had sold well on the platform in Japan. But that's kind of, they are tenacious like that, but I think that they are trying to do that risk-taking while they still have capital coming in, rather than, you know, when they're in that, like, we're down to a skeleton crew just trying to keep the lights on. So I think that rather than that being particularly risky, I think that is the only reasonable survival strategy given the position they are in.
Okay.
So when do we get a Souls like East? Is that where, I think that's where we're headed.
Fuck yourself. I will like, I will cut my own head off.
Wow.
I was going to say, I'm not sure if Adol himself would be a good, what was the right word? Thematic match to that kind of gameplay. He's just not grim dark enough.
No, I think they would do that anyway. That's too slow for East.
Yeah, if they did that, that's why I'm saying if they did that, I would cut my own head off.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's not the right match.
My choice of words in reference to Shinji Mikami saying that he would cut his own head off if Resident Evil 4 came out on anything but the GameCube.
How's he doing today?
So they put a carrot, okay. A dog called Mikami's head in God Hand. but yeah, like,
so apparently he's a Dullahan now. Yeah.
Yeah, but broadly speaking, I don't think anything would be able to kill my interest in a new East game stone dead than it trying to be a Souls game. Like, I don't know if I've ever locked and loaded this rant for the podcast, but like, one of the most depressing things in the world is seeing that become just the generic mode of action RPG combat. And mm-hmm. everything, like, I've complained about it before. Like, just this normalizing all defense around, like, one extraordinarily powerful, like, timed blocking mechanic that also ensures that every fight has to be pretty slow, because for that timed blocking mechanic to work for a broad group of people, the attack animations have to be pretty readable. And yeah, just a total betrayal of East, where its biggest strength has always been that it is a very quickly paced game. So yeah, I won't rant about something that doesn't exist yet. God, please don't do that to my poor East. Okay, can we do like one more question? Because like,
there are no more questions.
Yes, there are. Let's see. I think there's only one more anyway. So, and now you're hearing news about Granzella, Disaster Report, R-Type Final 2, weren't even able to pay salary to their employees between May 2023 and May 2025, and they only had 46 employees. You just have got to ask just how bad is the earning and salary problem of Japanese developers that are outside of the big ones?
I mean, like, Granzella is also in extremely niche genres. Like, trying to make a living as a shmup developer is not easy.
Right. Housemarx stopped doing it for that reason. That's why they're doing these weird roguelikes now.
Also because Sony bought them and they weren't going to
They weren't going to pay for another Next Machina, which no one played except me.
But yeah, like, I saw the thing about Granzella being having those financial issues, and all I could think was, I saw it in like the legal report, and all I could think was, oh, they are just out of money. Like, that is it. Like, they're just out of money. And then of course there was a live stream about the potentially forthcoming R-Type Tactics Cosmos Collection, which I didn't watch it, but the people I know who did described it as like the producer trying to essentially looking like he's barely holding back a breakdown, talking about how they're still desperately trying to find a way to make it happen. I wouldn't bet money on that collection managing to come out. It's sad. Granzella was what was left of the R-Type, the IREM that made R-Type and Disaster Report and Steambot Chronicles and a lot of interesting innovative software. And I'd love for there to be a way for them to survive, but a lot of there's just not an easy path to make that happen. And like their desire to keep R-Type's legacy going is admirable, and I love it, and I think it absolutely killed them.
It's a shame.
Yeah, like R-Type is one of the most wonderful storied shoot 'em up franchises in history, and like that and $5 will buy you a cup of coffee. Like, I hope they can manage to survive somehow, but I'm not holding my breath. Okay.
All right, let's start wrapping this up. And again, Farmer, thank you for the questions, and sorry that we failed you on such a colossal scale.
We do that most weeks, but we need to be better about.
Yes.
It's fine.
Joe, what is Soulsteel?
Not fine for me, damn it.
Remind me what Soulsteel is.
I noticed you weren't using any of the spells in the game. What?
You have all of them. You just don't know what they are.
How do I just find out what they are?
You have to cap one, or you look it up online.
There are things in the game that will tell you what they are, but you don't actually need to have them to use them.
Yeah.
So Soulsteel is tough to pull off, but the whole point is that it hits every enemy on screen and siphons life away from them and heals you. So it's the perfect thing to use against that sword enemy, which is optional too, by the way.
Okay. How do you do it?
Back, half circle, back, forward, and then attack, plus attack.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Okay.
Good for restoring your health when you're.
Yeah, that's why I said it. But I noticed you could also just be using the fireball spell. That's easy to pull off. That's up and then quarter circle. Okay, I use it all the time.
Yeah, I never found much use for it because it kind of locks you in place.
Do up and then quarter circle and attack, and you'll shoot fireballs.
Okay. Gaijin, while they're failing to understand how Symphony of the Night works, let's hear about where books are sold.
Well, for the next 2.5 hours, I still have free books available.
Ooh.
Not going to help anyone who's listening to this not live, but yeah, finishing up the author's birthday sale for Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. It's been interesting to compare this year to last year, I'll just say that. But again, if you enjoy tabletop role-playing games, if you enjoy experiencing other people play them, because again, apparently this is a major industry now, but this is, on my end, it's just a fun little pastime self-publishing thing. Yeah. If you just feel like supporting your local gaijin, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. I am currently probably halfway through writing episode 14 at this point. Out of 15. The main plot arc is supposed to be 15 episodes. Almost done.
Nice.
But with side stories and everything, it's currently 19 ebooks or 5 paperbacks and starting the 5th.
And so even
there's a lot to read.
Yeah, even if you missed out on the author's birthday sale, you're not exactly breaking the bank.
No. Especially since you could just, like, buy any individual book except maybe the summer camp novel, because that one's longer. And even then, any single ebook in the series is less than a cup of coffee at this point in the U.S. and possibly the novel as well, but then just because I'm not quite sure exactly how bad prices have gotten, but they cannot have gotten any better than the last time I checked. When I'm doing my self-publishing sales reports, I'm always reporting them in number of copies I can buy from the supermarket. And it's occurred to me that this is not a very good indicator anymore because it makes it sound like I'm making a lot more than I am.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, just for reference, at my usual retail overstock store, if I buy a bottle of cafe latte, it's like 117 yen, which is 74 cents at the current exchange rate. So, yeah. So I've made about 5 coffees worth of royalties so far this sale, it's Doesn't not as good as it sounds.
Yeah.
But on the plus side, lots of people have picked up the first episode, which is free for the sale.
That's good.
Bad news is almost nobody's picked up anything else. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, people like free things. Maybe some of them will pick up more when they've actually read through it.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, but compared to last year's sale where I actually unloaded like 120 paid ebooks at the same time.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize how well last year had gone.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not doing too badly on the free book orders this year, but paid book, discounted book orders, it's currently minus 98% from last year. I'm like,
Go buy his book, people.
Yeah, hopefully it'll pick up again.
Buy all the books.
I bought one of the books.
Seriously, yeah, please. Yeah. But, I mean, even if you buy all of them together at full price on ebook, it's still less than your average AAA game. By a bit.
So, yeah, probably more entertaining. Depending on the AAA game.
It depends. But yeah.
That's right.
And standing
that's right, Gaijin. I'm saying your books are more entertaining than a Call of Duty.
Oh, I agree with
that. Yes, I assume that. Yes, yes.
Almost an insult.
Are they more entertaining than Falcom games?
Those aren't AAA.
Okay. Well, oh, you're right. Okay, you got me.
Now they don't have as much text as your average Trails game. But not much does.
God, yeah, no, that would be too much. That would be so much text.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I mean, okay. And besides princesses, we also have the Lit RPG, Vainglorious Longs the Night, which I wanted to put on sale. However, due to something or other, Amazon periods, I wasn't able to this time. Really annoying.
Next time.
Yeah, but yeah, Vainglorious Long as the Night, also available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. And also, Tanuki is a Teapot, Japanese folktale. Slowly working on it more, I think I've got like 15 new folktales typed up.
That'll be fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I just need about 10 more to actually pad it out properly. And then more illustrations.
Both fun.
Yep. And then after that, under the other pen name, Spearwater, Michael Spearwater, we have Wager for Wanderlust, which is a fairly spicy fantasy world take on Around the World in 80 Days, just because I try to write new things. I want to try and challenge myself. I chose a very weird combination of genre factors that year for NaNoWriMo, and it came out pretty well, but I'm not publishing it under the same pen name as what I use for young adult fantasy.
Understandable.
More to come under that pen name. I'm just working on some covers now.
Good. Cool.
Yep.
Okay.
Oh god, what is this sub weapon that I've picked up?
Which one?
The hand
thing. It's the purifying salt.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, yes, buy my book.
Joe, where can we find you?
All right, so at this point, I'm still doing my RP Gamer streams Tuesday night, Thursday night, still doing Pokemon. I've made a lot of progress in the DLC so far, I think. I got my ass kicked by a Meowstic when it was a rogue mega evolution, and got it on the third try, though, after I ate some more candy and exploited all its weaknesses. So I'm going to keep playing that for a while. I don't know how much longer, and I'm thinking about what I want my next game to be, and I'm thinking if I want to maybe ask them to send me something. Just not entirely sure yet. And I haven't been streaming at all on my own Twitch channel, unfortunately. I've kind of given up on that. And then over on YouTube under Smoke and Joe Gamer, you can find a whole bunch of videos. I did a holiday buying guide series like I do every year, so I didn't get around to covering all the games that I wanted, but there's just, you know, some videos about Mario Kart World. Trails in the Sky First Chapter is in there. Sonic Racing Cross Worlds. Everybody's Golf Hot Shots. So yeah, those are my latest videos, just trying to help people decide if they want to spend their holiday cash and gift cards on those games or not. But of course, now it's the middle of January, so the sales are ending and people probably aren't looking to buy new games anymore. But yeah, that's where you can check me out. You can follow me in Blue Sky as well under Smoke and Joe Gamer. And, you know, if you follow my YouTube channel, you'll see any new videos that come up. But I just don't really have much planned right now. I'm trying to spend less time on the internet and social media and less time staring at my phone. And I also want to read more books. And I do have a Princesses of Pizza Parlor book that I've been meaning to read for a long time. So that's on my list. Yay. Yeah. So that's about it. I mean, I was practicing my guitar today, but I haven't recorded anything in a while, and I don't know if I'm going to be doing that again soon. So that's all I got for you.
Sounds fair. I think that about wraps us up. If you would like to ask us questions, as dear friend Fireminer did, you can catch us on Mondays at normally around 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 Eastern. And if you catch us on twitch.tv/rpgamer or twitch.tv/askwheels, you can ask us questions in the chat and we will try to answer them. You can also ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord in the podcast section. If you go to the RP Gamer Discord and if you go to RP Gamer and click community, you can get an invite to the Discord. It's a lovely community, whether you want to ask us questions or not. And you can also ask us questions in the comment section of RP Gamer. Under these very episodes, we try to check the last few episodes before we start. Otherwise, I think that about wraps it up for us tonight, and my throat is starting to kill me, so I guess I will just say, see you, Space Cowboys.
See ya.
See ya.
This is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you.